Yo, what's up? Welcome to In the Thick. I'm Mariano Hosan.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, and this is ITT Sound Off.
Dude. I mean, oh my God. So, you know, I did in fact live through an almost impeachment with Richard Nixon. I was alive when he resigned.
Yeah.
I did live through the impeachment of Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And you know what? It was fascinating that people, Julio, were like, should we do this again? Because, you know, it didn't work. And I'm just like, okay, let's just do the quick update. It's a hell of a ton of stuff that's going on, people. So you guys know this because you're all news consumers.
Right.
Everything is still happening. We know that the House committees are doing their investigations, that they're holding hearings, that they're serving out subpoenas, that Kurt Volker on Thursday, the former U.S. Special Representative for Ukraine negotiations, was the first official to testify about the whistleblower complaint. He was speaking before the House Intelligence, Oversight, and Foreign Affairs Committees in private deposition. According to two sources who had information about the private testimony, Volker said he told Ukraine leadership not to interfere in U.S. politics despite Trump's request.
Oh, God.
Okay. We're going to believe you there. You just said, don't do it.
Yeah.
And there was this news that Secretary of Energy Rick Perry, former governor of Texas, is resigning at the end of the year. He is tied to Ukraine. Surprise, surprise.
And fossil fuels and energy. What a surprise.
On Thursday, you know, 45 just basically went on TV and said, let me just see what happens if I say this straight up. In a televised comment to reporters at the White House, he said that Ukraine and now China come investigate Joe Biden. Trump also had this joint press conference with the president of Finland, Sauli Niinisto, on Wednesday. And there was this exchange with reporter Jeff Mason from Reuters, who was pressing 45 on the Bidens, Joe and Hunter.
The question, sir, was what did you want President Zelensky to do about Vice President Biden and his son, Hunter?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, it was just a follow-up of what I just asked you, sir.
Listen, you ready? We have the president of Finland. Ask him a question.
I have one for him. I just wanted to follow up on the one that I asked you, which
was,
what
did you
want him to... Did you hear me?
Did you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Ask him a question.
I will, but...
I've given you a long answer. Ask this gentleman a question. Don't be rude.
No, sir, I don't want to be rude. I just wanted you to have a chance to answer the question that I asked you.
I've answered everything. It's a whole hoax. And you know who's playing into the hoax? People like you and the fake news media that we have in this country. And I say in many cases, the corrupt media, because you're corrupt. Much of the media in this country is not just fake, it's corrupt. And you have some very fine people, too. Great journalists, great reporters. But it, to a large extent, it's corrupt and it's fake. Ask the president of Finland a question, please.
Okay, I'll move on now. Mr. President?
Right.
Gotcha.
So, Julio, it's the whole thing that we've been saying over and over again, which is, you know, sadly, the white male-dominated mainstream news media,
yeah,
they continue to basically just normalize what's happening here instead of calling it what it is. Anyway, I could go on and on, Julio, but tell me,
yeah,
how you doing?
This is exactly what Trump wants, is to be the center of attention, even when it's clear that he's just providing sort of these moments of like, here's another article of impeachment, article of impeachment for you. It's like Oprah handing out article of impeachments all the time with him. You know what I'm saying? It's like, then you're talking to the Congress, they're in recess. You would think that the Democrats would wake up and be like, you know what? Let's just cut through the bullshit. Let's just get these articles voted on next week. Because this whole notion of like trying to find facts. I mean, Maria, Willie Geist on Morning Joe read the text messages this Friday morning on what Volker said.
On August 28th, Zelensky's aide texts Volker a Politico article about Trump withholding military aid to Ukraine, saying, quote, I need to talk to you. Several days later, on September 1st, Taylor texts Sondland, are we now saying that security assistance and White House meeting are conditioned on investigations? Sondland responds, call me. A week later, Taylor texts Volker, the nightmare scenario is they give an interview and don't get security assistance. The Russians love it, and I quit. Taylor also texts Sondland the following day this, quote, as I said on the phone, I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign. Sondland waited and responded more than 4 hours later, telling Taylor that Trump, quote, has been crystal clear, no quid pro quos of any kind, and then suggest they stop discussing the matter over text message.
It could not have been clearer. He's lying. He's straight up lying. This whole notion of corrupt.
Yeah.
He's just completely flipped it. You know, and I'm not an expert on authoritarianism. This is where I really feel like we need to be turning to our fellow journalists who have lived through authoritarianism and how you practice journalism in the face of authoritarianism, which is not to quote the president and just requote and give validity, but is rather to give context, which is yet again, you know, this president has lied. Yet again, this president is now breaking the law.
In front of us.
If the president happened to be a Latino, Latina, Muslim, gay man, black man, woman, the headline would be President X is a criminal.
Right.
President X is a lawbreaker. And they don't do that because he's a white man. And white men in this country are perceived to be what we all want to achieve to be. You know, they are, their crimes are white collar crimes, you know, where nobody really gets hurt.
Yeah, they fail up.
But white men,
yeah,
they just get that pass.
It's pretty clear in the last week and a half, no matter how you want to spin this. But here's my other thing, Maria. The Joe Biden campaign is playing into the same trap that the Hillary Clinton campaign did with Trump.
What do you mean? So what do you think needs to happen?
Well, I think like he's being a little bit like, I understand you want to take the high road, but you have the president of the United States unchallenged throwing out these accusations with these tweets, you know, on an hourly basis about Hunter Biden and Joe and what is he doing. And I just think that there's no forcefulness in the campaign, that if you take the high road against Trump, you're playing into Trump's hands. And I do believe that the Biden campaign, if they're going to fight this, fight it. I think in the end, Trump has succeeded in creating the doubts of the Biden campaign. And if Biden leaves, then he's going to go after Warren. He's going to go after Sanders. This is what we're seeing. This is what he is campaigning. And that's the part where it's like, here's another article of impeachment. Here you go. This is what we're going to expect for the next year.
Right. It's just one thing after another. I just want to quote something that CNN reported on Thursday, which that they said that Trump discussed Biden's political prospects as well as those of Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
During a phone call with Chinese President Xi Jinping on June 18th, according to two people who are familiar with the discussion. And in that call, Trump also told the president of China that he would remain quiet on Hong Kong protests as trade talks progressed. So everywhere, everywhere we are seeing quid pro quo. And now what's become this thing is like no quid pro quo. The point is that journalists have got to do a better job. We know that our listeners are counting on us and we love them because of that. But so much of the country is depending on the mainstream. They've got to do a better job.
Okay, moving on to our second topic. And that is the conviction and sentencing of Amber Guyger, a white police officer in Dallas who shot and killed her black neighbor, Botham Shem John, in September of last year. According to Guyger, she mistook his apartment for hers after she had just gotten off her shift.
Weird.
Her apartment was directly under Jean's on the third floor. Guyger overlooked all the signs that this wasn't her home and said that she thought that Jean, who was eating a bowl of ice cream, watching television, was a burglar. Guyger shot and killed him.
Yeah, because you know what? When you're sitting down watching TV,
eating a bowl of ice cream,
and you're a black man.
Yeah.
Yes, of course you would be confused with a burglar, of course.
You must be a threat.
Mm.
In your own home, right? So Guyger, this week, she was convicted of murder and sentenced to 10 years in prison. There's a lot of people who were actually surprised that she was convicted at all. She was only the second police officer since 1973 to be convicted of murder in Dallas.
Damn.
And after she was sentenced, the courtroom was emotional. And there was a moment that got a lot of attention when Jean's brother told Guyger that he forgave her and then hugged her. And then you see the judge in the case, Tammy Kemp, she also went to Guyger and consoled and hugged her.
Strange. It was like this woman murdered somebody in cold blood.
Right.
Carried all of the worst stereotypical ideas about a black man and embodied it.
Right.
And, you know, Jean left behind a family who loved him, who will miss him.
Yeah.
And everybody is consoling her.
Obviously, a lot of layers here about forgiveness and how personal it is. But I really, really loved what Dr. Eddie Gloud, who is a great friend of the show and of ours, also a fantastic ITT All-Star. I really love what Eddie had to say about this on MSNBC this Thursday.
So as Brother John expressed his undying love for Christ, and he did it in forgiving Amy Geiger, there was still the demand that Amy Geiger be held accountable for her actions in a way that was just and fair. What was interesting is in John's testimony, he sounded like a prison abolitionist. He said he didn't even want her to go to jail. So this is not a matter about giving her a harsher sentence. Where you stand on the issue is that you just want justice, right? And so I think it's important for us to see that there's a moment where you can express one's faith in the way that John exemplified, and at the same time express one's anger. There was no judge who hugged Tamir Rice's mama. There was no judge who paid attention to what was going on with Tanya McDowell. There was no judge who actually spoke to the differential between Felicity Hoffman getting 14 days and that woman getting 5 years. And so it makes sense that people can be angry about the systemic unfairness in our criminal justice system, and yet, exhibit profound grace and love in a moment of tragedy.
When we think about the power of restorative justice,
yeah,
that's what it looks like, right? I mean, the capacity to forgive means that you are not carrying the weight because we all carry all kinds of stuff. But when you make this decision to forgive, what you're really doing is you're freeing yourself, right? So this is what, in fact, his brother was doing, was in many ways freeing himself by offering this hug. I love the notion of this being part of a prison abolition movement. I mean, this is a beautiful thing that is happening in our country, conversation about restorative justice or prison abolition. The reality check, though, is that we have a private prison industry that only cashes in when it has a body in a cell. And therefore, this push for restorative justice, prison abolition, is going to be met head on with the private prison industry that is going to say, no, we need to put more people in prison.
I'm glad you heard what Eddie said, because like I said, to me, he summarized a lot of the feelings that I was going through about this case this week. Because one of the things that I believe is being misrepresented when it comes to the hug is that Black people can forgive white people. And there's a part of me that's like, this is sort of like Black survival in white supremacy. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is just not one example. And I feel like this is going to be misrepresented as sort of like, oh, compassion, and we live in this post-racial society. This is such a complex story. And if people feel anger and forgiveness at the same time, I think that's the reality here. Right, Maria?
It represents a lot of things to a lot of different people. But everyone in the family, you know, had their own reaction and interpretation of what happened. Alison Jean, the mother of Bothenshem Jean, this is what she had to say.
Yesterday, we saw the conviction of Amber Geiger, and today we heard the sentence of 10 years in prison. That 10 years in prison is 10 years for her reflection and for her to change her life. But there is much more to be done by the city of Dallas.
Yes.
The corruption that we saw during this process must stop.
Amen.
And it must stop for you.
Amen.
Because after now, I leave Dallas. But you live in Dallas.
Yes.
And it must stop for everyone.
The thing is that because he was killed, we will never, ever know what Bothenshem Jean actually had to say, his side of the story, what he understood about why this woman was coming into his home. We will never know that because he's gone.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move on to our final topic. And we're going to do a quick immigration update because, you know, apart from the discombobulation that many of us are feeling, and no, Mercury is not in retrograde. I asked my Barnard students yesterday.
I love it. I love when you get all astrological on me.
You know, because the thing is that as we're watching the test of democracy and we're watching the impunity, which again, impunidad is a word that is so tied to our experience as Latin Americans, as Mexican, you know, as Puerto Ricanos, you know. So
yeah,
we're watching how this is being applied to this president. there's all of this other stuff that is happening regarding immigration, and it's being put into policy right now. Mm-hmm. This presser that Trump did with the president from Finland was really like crazy.
Hot mess.
Nobody is really kind of headlining how insane this president sounded.
Yep.
He used that meeting to completely deny, hello, hello, wink, wink, that he ever made these comments that when we heard them, we were like, of course he said this. You know, that thing that he wanted to, you know, have a moat filled with alligators to protect our borders, that, oh, maybe migrants should just be shot in the legs, you know, in, I guess, our really super big calves. And then he just said, no, that was not true. I never said anything about that. It's just, you know, again, we are the corrupt ones, the journalists. And that's, you know, again, become normal.
You never said that. They came to me, the comms people. They came to me yesterday and they said, did you say this? I said, why are you asking that stupid question? Because the fake news media is saying that you said this in a book. I said, what book? And they said, Washington Post. They said, well, obviously it's fake because almost everything the Washington Post does is fake. It's a fake newspaper. It's owned by a rich guy for the purposes of giving him power in Washington. It's really, I mean, it's a lot.
Right. It wasn't the Washington Post that wrote the article. It was actually from the New York Times.
It was the Times.
You know, you're beginning to hear this exasperation in his voice. But the point is that, of course, this is completely believable.
Yeah.
That he would want to moat with alligators in the Rio Grande. Hello?
And shoot migrants. Of course. What were we saying 4 years ago, Maria?
Dehumanization. And you're right, Julio. What we understood is that this is going to have impact on real lives. People will probably suffer some sort of something. Now we know violence,
right,
in some cases the death of children because of these words.
Right. And the minimalization of this is what I'm saying. It's like now we, as you know, fellow journalists are like, Mr. Trump, did you say that you wanted to shoot migrants in the legs?
And exactly.
I saw Chuck Todd this week actually basically mocking the idea of a moat.
Mm.
And that's what I mean, is that in the quest to quote unquote fact check and call out the president on his language, our fellow journalists are also playing into the dehumanization game of migrants. And that's the part that I have trouble with, because we told you so, people.
And they told us to calm down.
Exactly. God, you guys are being over the top. And here we go. But listen, there were even a couple of other things that happened this week in immigration that I'm sure people missed.
Mm.
Wednesday, senior Department of Homeland Security officials said that the Trump administration was planning to collect the DNA of migrants in detention.
Ugh.
And the samples would be entered in the FBI criminal database. This story got coverage from the New York Times when it was reported this week. But got to give credit to BuzzFeed News, who actually reported it back in August. Plus, the Associated Press reported that the Trump administration is going to privatize migrant child detention facilities.
I want to cry.
So, Maria, how do you get through this?
When I saw that, I got shivers all over my body, because what we are witnessing, we're still kind of waiting to see mass protests that shut this mass industrialized detention of people whose only crime was that they were not born in the United States, really, essentially.
Yeah.
For the private prison companies, we know, Julio, this is a good week for them.
Yeah.
They understand that their profit margins are only going to grow.
Yeah.
Because if you know what's happening, if you take 1 second to understand what's happening in Venezuela,
yep,
or Haiti or El Salvador or Honduras and Mexico, and that you understand that women and children are scared and running for their lives, and children are you know, running for their lives alone, then the private prison industries that are now going to be holding these children, it's a ka-ching factor.
Yeah.
There is a steady stream of babies, toddlers, children, who all they're going to do is house them, won't educate them, barely provide health care, won't protect them, allow them to be raped, barely feed them. And that's what's going to be happening. That is happening. And now will continue to grow for profit in the United States of America.
Yeah. But hey, let's talk about all his tweets 24/7. You know, you want to talk about disproportionate,
exactly,
use of news resources. Let's talk about his tweets instead.
Exactly. But our listeners know that we live with a lot of joy, too. So and I went boxing this morning, so I'm good.
Oh, good. I love when you go boxing.
I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
And remember, dear listener, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us after you go boxing. No, really, rate and review us because it helps. Hit the bag and then rate and review us. Also, remember, you can listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you choose to get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family to listen. In the Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow, Noor Saudi. Our audio engineers are Stephanie Lebeau and Julia Caruso. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our interns are Temitayo Fabengle and Lita Hallowell. The music that you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and ZZK Records. We'll see you on our next episode, dear listener. Have a great weekend. Bye.
Nos vemos.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.